This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today is a day of choosing, so we're headed to a few places where that's happening until 8 p.m. Pacific time.
So everything's done right in the booth. You don't need to go back to turn your ballot anywhere else like the old days. So it's all done right in the booth.
That's a guy named Mike who's working a voting center inside the Veterans Memorial Complex in Culver City. He's explaining to a crowd of people how to cast their ballots on this, California's primary election day. Well, a few folks have been reporting some problems. Jonathan Mooney said he tried to perform his civic duty at a center in Santa Monica yesterday.
Went to vote at my local polling place. Waited in a two-person line for about 15 minutes as well-intentioned volunteers fumbled with their iPads. Only to be told that there was a computer error and I had to vote provisionally or come back later. Bottom line, not super psyched about the new voter tech and miss the old school paper ballots.
Well, speaking of paper ballots, some centers actually ran out of paper for the new ballot machines. Others were reporting long lines and limited bandwidth for their servers. But voters at the Veterans Memorial Complex seem to have a good experience this morning.
This is definitely the most people I've seen, but it was pretty smooth in the process.
Yeah, I mean, it was the touch screen. It printed out, let you see it, and then it cast. It was wonderful.
It wasn't that big of a deal. It was like more of a process to get my information correct. But, you know, the machine process, it's kind of like going to an ATM, so it's not anything harder than that.
I've had to vote in North Carolina before, and in comparison, like, just the fact that I didn't have to stand in line for 4 hours was great.
That was Corey Mintz, Geetika Lizardi, Lawrence Vargas, and Laura Hubbard. They talked to KCRW's Angel Carreras, who's been out and about today checking out voting centers, and he's with us right now. Hi, Angel.
Steve, hello. How are you?
I'm well on this Super Tuesday. You began your day this morning in Culver City, as I mentioned, at the Veterans Memorial Complex. What was the scene like there?
It was packed, Steve. It was a line full of people heading out the door, wrapping around the building. A ton of people, but it was a fast-moving line.
So we don't call them polling places anymore. We call them voting centers. How do people like this new system?
Mostly it's been good. I'm going to say of everyone I've talked to, it's been overwhelmingly positive. Some people have some concerns, like Corey Mintz.
I'm a little bit worried sometimes when you cast a ballot that is sort of tallied digitally. So just because of the last election sort of makes you a little bit more vulnerable.
So he's worried about, obviously, the electronic aspect of all of this. But there is, I believe, Angel, a paper ballot that you will see. You physically, tangibly can hold this piece of paper and then you reinsert it back into the ballot machine. Is that correct?
Yes, I voted yesterday. And yeah, you pick your decisions. You shove the paper in there. It collects it in a little receptacle connected to the machine you're using. And yeah, you get to see it.
So there is a paper trail. Do people think it's a faster system or a slower system than the old one?
Definitely faster. Even if the lines are long, people didn't seem too concerned. It was a fast-moving process, and as you heard from the tape earlier, some people expected to be there for a very long time and were out in 30, 45 minutes tops.
So in many cases, it's a quick process going in, going out. We've had experiences, some of our people here at KCRW who were voting mentioned some long lines at some places. Again, other places, not so bad. What about the voting center workers? Do they prefer the new or the old voting systems?
A poll worker I talked to at the voting center in Culver City, he seemed to like the new system. The servers they use, the bandwidth was kind of overloaded, so it made it harder for the workers to locate people's information and stuff. But as far as voting, they're unaffected, but the poll workers, they seem to like the new system, just weren't into how slow everything was moving on their part.
It's so funny. It sounds so idyllic where you are right now. I hear birds chirping, a little wind blowing in the background. Where are you right now, by the way?
Beautiful scene setting. I'm in Inglewood right now at the Family Bible Center, I believe it's what it's called.
And that is a voting center.
Yes. It is vastly different from the Culver City one. Instead of a giant kind of gymnasium, where people are voting with tons of machines. This place is kind of a church building. Only one room is dedicated to voting, and there's three machines. That's it.
That's it. One of close to 1,000 voting centers across L.A. County, and this one in Inglewood, just a few machines and a busy scene, a lot of people there.
Yeah, a busy scene, and since it's around lunchtime, there's people that have kind of peeked in and out to see how long the wait would be to try to vote on their lunch. One poll worker told everyone, if that was the case, to go to City Hall or wait till later because they are open till 8.
All right, the voting centers, Angel, are open until 8 o'clock tonight. If anyone is confused about where to go vote, is there a place they can go? I mean, I know about LAVote.net. Is that the place where you can look at the voting centers?
Yes, that is a handy tool. It gives you pretty much a map. You enter your address. It tells you where you can go to head to a voting center that's open till 8. So anyone just getting out of work or something like that, you should be good.
You should be good if you're getting out of work before 8 o'clock tonight. And again, those voting centers available at lavote.net. And even if you're not registered to vote, you can do that on site. So no excuse, right?
No excuse, none at all.
KCRW's Angel Carreras reporting from voting centers today in Culver City right now in South L.A. near Inglewood. Thank you so much, Angel.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate you.
And the voting goes on, of course, for several more hours, but there's already lots and lots of data about who has already voted, which could give us an idea of who could come out on top in California when those votes are all counted, eventually. Paul Mitchell is vice president of Political Data Incorporated and a former Democratic political consultant. Paul, welcome to you.
Hey, thanks for having me here again.
You bet. It is still pretty early in the day, but can you tell us anything from exit polling so far that we've seen?
Well, what we do know is that more than 4 million ballots are already in and opened and processed and signature verified, and that's just from people who've been mailing their ballots in for the last 29 days. And, you know, there's probably going to be several more million just coming in the mail and, you know, plenty coming voting in person. So overall, we're expecting north of 10 million votes to be cast, which is significantly higher than 2016. And as a percentage of our electorate, just right around 50%.
I was looking at some of the data that you'd sent us earlier today, Paul, and I see that of the people who voted early, it seems, and Republicans, by the way, are in third place behind Democrats and no party preference, right, in the state of California?
Yeah.
But they are certainly eager to vote early at 35% of the ballots already in. What does that tell us?
Well, there's two things that are happening with that. One is that the early voting population is always much more white, conservative, affluent, homeowners, you know, people who are repeatedly voting early in election after election. So that part makes sense. The other is that for Republicans, there was essentially a binary choice. You're either going to vote for Trump or somebody else. In fact, I helped with a pollster who was putting together a survey, and they just ended up putting the survey question, are you going to vote for Trump or one of the other candidates? Because there's just not really a race on the Republican side. Whereas Democrats, I think there were a lot of Democrats who were consternating about who to vote for, potentially holding on to those ballots. So despite the fact that we had 4 million ballots early and record numbers of ballots early, there still were more voters that were interested on the Democratic side who had yet to turn in their ballots.
So energized voters there. I guess the question for me is what are some of the emerging themes coming out of Super Tuesday? Do we know?
Yeah. I think the most important theme, and this is important for people that are watching election returns tonight, is that essentially there are two Californias. There is the California that voted in the first 27 days of voting prior to South Carolina, where on the Democratic side, the presidential race, everybody's watching. There was a lot of movement between a multi-way candidate race and a lot of people not knowing exactly kind of where the winds were shifting. But after South Carolina and then after the endorsements on Sunday, it really seems as though there was this crystallization of an establishment lane and then obviously Sanders leading the anti-establishment lane. And in a way, the electorate that's casting the ballots in these last 2 days of the election know different things and have a different race with different leading candidates than those who are voting the first 27 days. And what's going to happen is tonight at 8 o'clock, when they announce the first results, those results are going to come from those people that voted in the first 27 days. So we're going to see a lot of movement in the voting, the tabulations throughout the night and potentially for the next several weeks.
So you're saying the people who voted 27 days before, prior to today, right, and prior to the shakeup where Pete Buttigieg is out and Amy Klobuchar is out and they both endorsed Joe Biden, the establishment, quote unquote, establishment candidate, you're going to see more movement as the votes come in later because this polarization has taken place.
Yeah. So just to think about it, based on how many votes came in and the polling, we expect to see that in the first results that come out, that those absentee voters that voted prior to Saturday, 20% of them were voting for a candidate who's no longer in the race.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at those 4 million ballots, about half of those are Democratic ballots. And so we're probably expecting north of 400,000, maybe up to 500,000 votes for candidates who are no longer in the race. And then you look at the people who are voting yesterday and today, and it's just it's a completely different ballot. It's a completely different understanding of the dynamics of the race. So it's really interesting to watch.
All of that, Paul, notwithstanding, L.A. County poured tens, hundreds of millions of dollars into this voting overhaul. We have these voting centers now. Again, we don't call them polling places. They're all over the county. You can vote at any one of them if you're a resident of L.A. County and registered to vote. And people have been able to do that for a while. Do we know yet what impact these changes have had on voter turnout? You said there is excitement. Do you think people are more excited about the system?
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting about election administration is that when you change, even when you change to a quote-unquote better system, there are always going to be challenges in the implementation about educating people about the new process, maybe in this case where the vote centers are, how to use them, the additional features available at these vote centers, like the same-day registration and being able to change your party right there on the spot. There are a lot of really amazing opportunities for voters. Like if they were mailed the wrong ballot, they can just go to a vote center and get the right ballot or re-register. So there are great opportunities with the system, but whenever you introduce change, it does create potential problems. And I think that the county registrar's office has been doing an excellent job at trying to communicate these to voters. I think the media is doing a great job at highlighting the change and trying to educate voters. And we'll see at the end if it does do what is intended, which is to not just increase turnout, but make voting more equitable, making more people, giving more people the opportunity to cast their ballot.
What about the Latino votes, Paul? Because that's a big deal. We talked about the demographics and the people who are voting early, more Republicans voting early. But the Latino vote obviously is going to be very important among Democrats. The primary is, where the biggest contest is on the Democratic side. So how do Latino voters factor in since they have the plurality here in California?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Latinos are the plurality of California's population. They're more than a quarter of the registered voters, but oftentimes they only end up being around a fifth of the people that cast ballots, especially in a primary election. So that's a big challenge for us as a state.
Do you see more engagement from Latinos, though, Paul, in this election? Have your numbers shown that?
So in the early voting, we generally don't see big spikes in Latino turnout. The big spikes in Latino turnout usually happen with Election Day voting. So that's one of the things we're definitely going to be looking at after this election, once we get all the data. In the early votes, that Latino vote just doesn't produce the same kind of numbers.
What do you think we can expect at 8 o'clock tonight when those polls close? The data are going to be pretty incomplete, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're only going to be seeing half of the electorate. Even when we go to bed, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning for us political nerds, we're only going to have half the picture. And it is going to be potentially a awkward half of the picture because, like I said, the weight that's going to be given to those people that voted early. And even in a race like locally in L.A., you have this DA's race that it had a big shakeup just yesterday morning at 6:30 in the morning, you know, big things happening in that DA's race that might change people's mindset, whether they voted in the first 27 days before the election or yesterday and today.
Paul Mitchell, Vice President of Political Data, Inc., and a former Democratic political consultant, and our friend here at KCRW. Paul, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
And thanks for your friendship.
We love friends. Just ahead, an NPR staple, another friend of ours, goes all Hollywood. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and while Thanksgiving is months away, we thought it would be a public service to give you a specific recipe in advance.
Maybe like me, you will be doing your holiday marketing this weekend. There are always raw cranberries on the top of my shopping list because it is time to make Mama Stamberg's cranberry relish.
No, we are not going to give you Mama Stamberg's actual recipe. We're going to give you Susan Stamberg herself. That is a voice you're probably familiar with. She's one of the founding broadcasters of NPR. At a time when there weren't very many women in broadcasting, Susan Stamberg, along with Linda Wertheimer and Cokie Roberts, took to the air on a network of educational radio stations that made up the fledgling National Public Radio, which is now heard on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio stations across the country. By the way, she's been giving out that recipe since then, right? For the past, Susan Stamberg? How long?
Yes.
How long have you been giving out that recipe, by the way?
Steve Chiatakis, and I have to tell you, I've wanted to say that for years, your name. Steve Chiatakis. 112 years it will be this coming
Thanksgiving. It is not 112 years.
Well, it feels like it.
You, Susan Stamberg, are a national treasure, and I got to tell you, the reason we are talking to you today is not to give the Thanksgiving recipe, but because you have gotten a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Susan Stamberg, what is it like to be honored in this way?
Well, I got to say it's totally thrilling and really unexpected. Although, you know, one does apply. There were happy little elves here at NPR and in other places who were behind this whole idea. And what I love is recognition for radio, which is the medium I cherish the most.
We all cherish. Absolutely.
Right.
It's such a special medium. It is, Susan. And you have been a trailblazer in the broadcasting space for a long time. We call you one of the founding mothers of NPR, and I hope that doesn't offend you in any way.
I invented the term.
You
no, it doesn't offend.
You did
sure.
This.
Listen, we've had founding fathers since the beginning of our republic. It's time for the founding mothers, and I am proud to be one of them, along with Cokie, and then first of all, Linda and I were the original staff. Then along came Cokie, Totenberg, and so many wonderful women broadcasters now.
Some of whom, many of whom, are still there. We lost
you
Cokie,
betcha.
Obviously, a few months ago, which was very sad, but so many folks who have who were trailblazers in public radio are still behind the microphones at NPR.
Yep.
What drew you to this medium? You were an English major in college, right?
Yes, I was. And as a matter of fact, my first radio job was at a station in Washington, D.C. It's one of the powerhouses now of our network, WAMU. And I walked in. It was a brand new station. I walked into the control room. I looked at all the buttons, the dials, the thises, the thats, and I thought, I was an English major. What am I doing here?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you had to run the board. You had to do everything at that station. It was a great place to learn and a wonderful place to be. But what drew me was that radio was the medium of my childhood. We didn't get television in my house till I was in junior high school. So radio is what kept us informed, kept us entertained, kept me happy to have colds because my mother would bring the white Emerson Bakelite radio from the kitchen, carried it into the bedroom, fluff up the pillows, and the two of us would sit and listen to the soap operas all day long. It was a medium I have loved almost since birth.
Oh, what beautiful memories. Speaking of which, when you remember that first broadcast you did on, well, what you co-hosted All Things Considered, right?
Sure. Yeah, I am the first woman to anchor a national nightly news program.
Who was it? You and Bob Edwards? Who was it?
Not at the beginning. It was a fellow named Mike Waters.
Were you nervous that first day you went on the radio? You knew that you were going to be on national radio, right, across the
you
country.
You bet I was. As a matter of fact, we were a totally different building back then, and in the garage of that building was one of these carryout places where you could get things that would be so bad for you today, you know, just full of calories and cholesterol and all of this. But then you'd go and get your lunch. And what they noticed, Linda, I think it was, who noticed that I wasn't eating that day, which was very unlike me. And she said, Susan, anything wrong? Oh, no, nothing. It's just fine.
Who was it in radio who inspired you?
Well, in radio, mostly they were actors and actresses. So on television, as we got older, The one who really did, strangely enough, was a fellow named Dick Cavett. He had a late-night show, and he did interviews on it, and he was terrific. He was really smart. He'd graduated Yale. He spoke well. He listened hard. He had good ideas for questions and listened hard to the answers. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you could do that on TV. You know, you could do that in broadcasting. And I wasn't there. You weren't hearing much of that in radio by the time I came of age to be on the radio. You had sort of abusive DJs, you know, and people who insulted their listeners and weren't very pleasant. So for us, it was a whole new sound that we were able to create with public radio.
You've been spending a lot of time in LA lately, haven't you? Like, you're here now.
I'm here now, and I've been coming every winter for many, many years. My son is here. My grandchildren are here. I can work here. I love this NPR West Bureau and the people who are at it. We've worked very well together. And sometimes, at number one on my list, I can stay warm.
You like staying warm. Do you go to the beach sometimes? Like, what's your favorite part of LA, do you think?
Oh, everything. I love the bougainvillea. I love the people. They're easier. The pace of life is slower, even with your dreadful traffic jams and the density of the traffic. People tend to be good-natured about it here. Or maybe I'm just driving too carefully to notice that they're shaking their fists at me.
I don't know what you're saying now, Susan.
But my secret is I do not go on freeways. And so that it seems to me the surface streeters, that's my favorite term in the world, surface streets. In the East, we call them streets, but not here. I love those idiosyncrasies, you know?
The surface streets. Because you want to avoid the freeways at all costs, right?
Oh, I won't. I can't drive fast, I get nervous.
Well, you're not going to on the freeways in LA. That's the beauty
That's
of it.
That's true.
Right?
It's probably safer.
You are. We started this interview with a little listen back to Mama Stamberg's cranberry relish recipe.
Yeah.
You have done so many iterations of that, mixing it with current day politics. You actually went to Ocean Spray.
I did. I called the president. After all these years, I called the president, and he was very civil. He'd never heard of me. He didn't know about public radio.
Oh, that's hard to believe. Really?
But he swore that he would put it in their cookbook. And I never checked. I really need to find out if he did that. And he was very charming. He'd been on the job maybe 3 months. This was last Thanksgiving. I've been desperate for new ways to sneak this thing on the air for years. If you have any or any of your listeners, please just like get in touch.
Your recipe was literally a part of American history, Susan.
Yes, it certainly has become it.
Which makes you a national treasure, as I said, so deserving of this Walk of Fame star.
That's got to be the reason. Absolutely, it's that recipe. And I realized that whenever my obituary appears, and I hope there's some time before
I
it does.
I hope so, too,
that will
for
be
all
the
of
lead.
Us. Yeah. Yeah,
thank you. But that will be the lead. Recipe for cranberry relish.
Where can we find your star?
Well, it's on the boulevard, and it's 6363. Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I understand. I really wanted to be by George Clooney, but nobody asked me.
Nobody. Susan Stamberg, special correspondent for NPR. Susan, what a great joy to talk to you. Congratulations.
And thank you so much.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a Michael Jackson play told from the perspective of his sparkly glove. Next on KCRW, The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell. We are online at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Share your thoughts with us. Election coverage throughout the afternoon. Special coverage from NPR starting at 5. I'll be back here at 7 o'clock at KCRW Election Night headquarters with you for the night to talk about Super Tuesday. And in the meantime, I'm Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your ears and for your time. Don't forget to vote. Have a great day.